You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 4th of June. Oh no, I watched college basketball. But I did it to watch Pro Scout, so it's okay. But oh my, oh my. Plus, the point guard situation with Ricky Rubio. If not Ricky Rubio, what? And if Donovan Mitchell, what? We look at it today on Locked On Jazz. Pow! This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making your offseason as a Jazz fan way better, because we have no offseason if you're a true Jazz fan. We do this podcast every single day. It's available on the new app, Himalaya. You can get that on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts as well. It's got curated playlists and all sorts of other fun items for you with their kind of, if you're having a slow day or fast day or these kind of things, fun stuff for you. Also available is on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Jazz. I did watch college basketball today, and last night I watched some Tennessee-Kentucky and some Tennessee-Purdue to see Admiral Schofield, Keldon Johnson, who's projected around the Jazz a bunch, Grant Williams, Tyler Hero, Cason Edwards a little bit, and I'll have a thoughts on those five players coming up on the show today. College basketball's got a little bit better, but holy smokes, is there a lot of back-to-the-basket, post-up, grinding, silly little hook shots, fadeaway jumpers, no drive and kick and blender and movement because there's no room on the floor because the three-point line's too close and not enough players can play, all sorts of crazy stuff like that. Jeez Louise. So I found it fairly miserable to watch, but I'll give you my thoughts on those players. I want to dig into something here first, though. There's been all this conversation about Ricky Rubio and all this. So let's discuss something here. If not Ricky Rubio, whom? So Kyrie's not coming. Kemba seems pretty unlikely, but maybe. Doubt it. D'Angelo Russell doesn't seem like the greatest fit. I'm hearing him to Phoenix. I'm hearing him to other places. Malcolm Brogdon's been talked about a lot. Probably the next one. He's probably more of a two than a one, but he's also not an elite athlete, and he's a restricted free agent, which is going to cost a lot of money, and maybe you can do it in a way you know Milwaukee won't match, but that's pretty risky, and the way restricted free agency works, you probably have to let Ricky go and probably have to let Derek go, and then you could end up holding the bag. And I'm not sure that we're an organization that likes the possibility of holding the bag. So I think the restricted free agent play on Brogdon would be tough. Terry Rozier's a restricted free agent. Obviously what happens with Kyrie there, he's got a Louisville tie, he's gutsy, he's not particularly efficient offensive player. I'm pretty nervous about putting another inefficient offensive player next to Donovan. Who's next? Depends your point of view on some of these guys. There's Patrick Beverley, there's Tyus Jones. I actually still like Elfrid Payton. Can't shoot a lick, but I like how he plays. Darren Collison. I might not like Elfrid Payton if I watch him 82 games a year, frankly. Darren Collison, Corey Joseph, Derrick Rose, Mamis Thomas-Sadaransky, restricted free agent later in the process. Delon Wright's a restricted free agent, but he can't really shoot. Tyler Johnson, I've always liked, but he's not really a one. I don't think we're heading down the Quinton Cook, Seth Curry as just shooters to play next to Donovan. Maybe. Maybe it's a different role, but that's not as like your point guard replacement. That's playing next to Donovan. So you run down, like, if not Ricky Rubio, then whom? Well, the answer may very well be Donovan Mitchell is your point guard at that point. So let's talk about that for a second. It was talked about a lot last year. I led the conversation largely that for the most part, the Jazz with Donovan off on the floor and Ricky off as point guard, that the Jazz were not as good as vice versa. So let's take a second and run through these numbers for a second. So Donovan Mitchell is on the floor. We have no Ricky Rubio and we have no Howell Neto on the floor. And the Jazz offensive rating is now a 108.9. It's in the 39th percentile of all offenses. The team's positive. in almost all of these, the team's positive because Dennis in the front office has put together a really good team and Quinn's coached a really good team. And I actually think we almost need to move off this idea that just because something's positive means it works. Like, this team has been put together well enough and Quinn's done a good enough job coaching it that we're actually, they're just positive. There's just, the team's positive. When do we reach our peak of positivity is what we're looking for, not just being positive. So looking at this offensively, so when Donovan's on the floor with Neto and Rubio off the floor, the Jazz offense is in the 39th percentile. Okay. Now, what happens when Donovan and Ricky are on the floor together? So what is the value here of Ricky? The Jazz offense is now a 112.6 in the 71st percentile. Don't worry, I'll go back over these percentiles and numbers a bunch of times here to see if we can tell a story. All right, so 39th percentile with just Donovan, no point guard, 71st percentile with Donovan Mitchell and Ricky Rubio. Now, let's dig in a little bit. So I don't have Ricky on the floor. I don't have Neto on the floor. And I have Donovan on the floor with two bigs. So with both Rudy and with Donovan. So nope, I've got Donovan, I've got Faves, I've got Gobert, and I have no point guard. The offense is now in the second percentile of all offenses in the NBA. They only did it for 298 possessions. It's not something that Quinn wanted. But it's now 99.7. It's in the second percentile of all offenses. Okay. So the problem for the Jazz, if I'm and the defense is great, by the way. This lineup is still positive. This is the argument that, it's still positive. It still works because the defense is in the 99th percentile with the 94.8. We're plus 4.9. As bad as this is offensively for these 300 possessions, it actually is in the 80th percentile overall, plus 5. It actually works. But offensively, if we're looking at that, and peak performance, the offense, when Donovan Mitchell is on the floor with Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert, is at 99.7. Second percentile. That's an F, right? So, all right. Well, then maybe the issue is not Donovan Mitchell at point guard. It's two bigs. So let's look at that. Donovan Mitchell on the floor. No other point guard. So no Howell Neto, no Ricky Rubio, and no Derek Favors. So we now have Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert on the floor. We have no point guard. But we also have no two bigs. Now the offense is a 113.2, and it's in the 75th percentile. Now that's interesting. It's pretty good. What gets a little hard now to weigh is, let's say we put Ricky Rubio back on the floor. Does the Jazz offense get better in this circumstance? Like, what's the Rubio value here to this lineup? It does. So you put Donovan Mitchell, Ricky Rubio, Rudy Gobert on the floor with no two bigs, and the Jazz offense goes to a 118.3 in the 96th percentile. Now that's pretty incredible. So there's two kind of interesting things here that we have. One is that Donovan Mitchell, Ricky Rubio, the team's better when Ricky Rubio's on the floor. Donovan Mitchell playing with both bigs, so there's no floor spacing, and he's got no place to drive, and he has to like distribute. We fall apart. We're in the second percentile. Spread floor with Rudy Gobert and Ricky Rubio, we actually jumped to the 96th percentile offensively. It was a 118.3. So now you have a spread floor and a point guard, and frankly, two point guards with Joe Ingles, and you really get rolling. What's interesting here, by the way, is the best offensive lineup, the two of them have Royce O'Neal in the game instead of Joe Ingles. A little surprising. One of them, actually, that's really good, that only played 44 possessions, was Rubio, Mitchell, O'Neal, and Ingles. When they spread that out for the limited time they played last year, it was pretty incredible. So this is interesting to me. Now, Favors, I can put Favors back in with Donovan, and it's not as good. Donovan and Derek just never connected this year at a great level. So it might be somewhat big specific. Like, if we take Rudy Gobert off the floor and we take Ricky Rubio off the floor and put Donovan on the floor with Favors, and also have to get Howell Neto off the floor because he's a plus-minus genius, the offense is in the ninth percentile. So Donovan Mitchell with Derek Favors, with no Rudy, no Ricky Rubio, and no Howell Neto, and the offense goes to 103.3 and is into the ninth percentile. That's just that, whatever reason, those two never, they run in, they like trip over each other's feet. What the reason actually is, Joe Ingles comes with a left-hand dribble off a pick. Derek Favors is rolling with his right hand available, and is a, he can catch the pass from a left-handed dribble from Joe Ingles, whereas Donovan Mitchell's coming with a right-hand dribble, and Derek Favors can't get to his right hand. He wants to get, has to get to his left hand. He's not as good, and then they don't combine. What's the value of Ricky Rubio? We put Ricky Rubio back on the floor here with Donovan Mitchell, Derek Favors, no Neto, and no Favor, and no Gobert, and the offense still not good. It's in the 32nd percentile, so it's a little bit better. So what's interesting here on this is similar lineups. You bring Rubio, the lineup is good. You bring Rubio in, it goes with Gobert, it goes plus 5. You bring Rubio in, it goes plus 4. And that's why Rubio overall is plus 4. What's interesting, though, is Donovan Mitchell, if you're going to make, so you're losing something with Ricky. He's got a value if you let Ricky go. If you play Donovan Mitchell and he's going to be your ball handler and there's no Ricky Rubio, now you really have to spread the floor. It's almost, the numbers would say, without overstating it too dramatically, that if you're going to turn Donovan Mitchell into your point guard because you don't re-sign Ricky, that you almost have to also let Favors go. Donovan Mitchell on the floor with Favors and Gobert, no Rubio's, in the third percentile overall offensively with 100.6. Like, that just, that doesn't work. It's limited possessions, 337 possessions, but it didn't work. Like, it's going to take a long time. Now, it's positive, but it didn't work. And the minute you take Favors off the floor, you go and you have Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert on the floor with no Ricky Rubio, you go from the third percentile to the 74th percentile offensively. The minute you spread that floor. So Donovan on the floor with two bigs, you're in the third percentile offensively. Donovan Mitchell on the floor with Rudy and not Derek, you're in the 74th percentile offensively. That's a big deal. Donovan Mitchell with Ricky Rubio and Rudy Gobert, no Derek Favors, you're in the 96th percentile offensively. It's interesting. All right, I'll let you chew on that while I let you know about what's going on at Murdoch Hyundai. Obviously, a great lineup of cars. You've heard me talk about the Hyundai so much. There's also great deals right now on 0% APR for 72 months for the month of June. So super, super deal right now in June for you as well with Murdoch. I'm driving the Santa Fe right now. I absolutely find it fabulous. It is... got all sorts of modern technology, self-driving aspects, the super cruise control, where I just put it on the number and then deal with the cars in front of me. I had a funny moment the other day. I was just driving. I was in the left lane, and I had a car behind me, and I looked and noticed it was a Hyundai, and I was like, oh, they probably have their Hyundai cruise control on that sets the distance between cars. And the one thing I would sometimes complain about the Hyundai cruise control is you can't be that obnoxious jerk who like gets up on the back of the guy in the left lane and gets him to move over when you think he's driving too slow for the left lane, because it leaves you the appropriate distance in case something goes wrong, so you're not in danger, right? So you're not being a jerk and you're not in danger. It actually prevents you from doing those things. And so this guy was pretty far back, and I was like, oh, he's got his Hyundai cruise control on, so that means I should probably move over so he can go. And I sure enough, I did. You could see him just go by. It was pretty kind of funny. That was like Hyundai speak to Hyundai speak. So check it out. The Santa Fe I'm driving is fabulous. So the Konas have been moving off the lot in a speedy fashion. The new Tucsons are creating quite a murmur. The 2019 Hyundai Tucson limit is 28,755 with a 2.4 liter and four-cylinder engine. Pretty sweet. All out at Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Also out in Logan and in Linden. All right, let me talk a little bit about the various players I watched today and what my thoughts were. Let's take my numbers darling Admiral Schofield out of Tennessee. So Admiral Schofield is not projected particularly high on many of the mock drafts. He's a guy whose numbers our numbers kind of peaked out. The latest NBA mock draft, I think, let me see if I have it here. ESPN NBA mock draft had us taking Keldon Johnson, who I'll talk to about in just a second. But they, I don't think they had Admiral Schofield going in the first round. Let me just say, big picture, I was left with just a little bit I watched understanding why people are talking about this draft as limited. Now, maybe I watched a bunch of guys that aren't going to be NBA players. I mean, Schofield is talking about being the 36th pick. I watched Carson Edwards, who's being talked about being the 34th. I watched Grant Williams, who I don't see being an NBA player at all, being the 32nd pick. So in a not very good draft, I may have just watched a bunch of second-round draft picks and then left thinking not very much of them. Schofield's a senior. And on this draft, I'm actually less worried about seniors than some others because I'm just looking for someone who can play. It's not a great draft, so you're just trying to find someone who can play. He does fit the mold of the guy who, by the time he got to be big and strong and 22 years old and everybody else was 18, he beat the crap out of him. So that is a huge red flag on when you're looking at a guy and he's 22 years old, he turned 22, and he's playing 18-year-old. And the Kentucky game, that's exactly what I watched. I watched Kendall Johnson, or Keldon Johnson. And Keldon Johnson is a freshman at Kentucky, and he's 19 years old, and he's facing a 22-year-old man. So let me break down what I saw of these two players. In Schofield, the first thing that jumps out is his legs are really heavy. Laterally moving, he's just big, right? He's lost 30 pounds. He weighs somewhere in the range of 241, depending on what thing. And you can see it. It's kind of neat in the sense that he's big. He definitely owns his own space around the basket. He started playing as a center early in his career. So if he's really a 6'6 wing, he actually has the ability to handle rebounding and taking physical contact, and he's not going to be soft in any way. So there's the positive to it. The negative to it is whether or not in a spread floor NBA game that's very different than what he's used to playing because of the collegiate game and he plays sometimes down low, whether or not he's going to be able to guard in space. And the limited times I saw him on the pick and roll, he got hit. He's big, so it's hard for him to avoid picks. Like, he got hit on a lot of, hung up on a lot of picks, got run off a lot of picks. You could tell very cognizant of it and trying to avoid it. And then that almost caught him off balance at times if he got juked the other way. So defensively, I thought the positive, he owned his own space. The weakness is just that big, heavy body of Admiral Schofield would be why, despite all the numbers I loved, you look at him and watch him as a player, and it's like, oh, that's probably a second-round draft pick. His weak side, he often is playing down on the baseline in Tennessee defensively, so he's coming over on weak side help, which is a weird thing because he's only 6'6". But he actually, I thought, was, he's not going to block a shot, so he's got to be there a step early, And I actually thought he was a step late on a bunch of stuff. I don't know, you know, what their systems are in defensively, but I would have thought as a four-year player, he got there faster. Some of the things I really liked about him, he can play a little bit off the bounce. He got stripped once or twice, but I think in a space floor with his body and his size, I think if he learns how to use that in the NBA, he actually could play a little bit of a dribble drive game. I don't think he can lift a lot. I think he's pretty heavy around the basket. But I do think that he has the ability to play off the bounce, make some progress, and be stronger than anyone else out there. And so, therefore, that will allow him to make some plays in a way that we maybe have not seen out of, you know, this, that will let him survive in the NBA. He's got a really high release on his shot, and it works. He hit 42%. He hit 39% the year before. He's taking 5 or 6. That actually just seems to be legit and is unblockable. Now, I wonder whether or not that actually can translate and be something that you can do in the NBA from distance. And there were some times where I felt like he had a shooting window he didn't take, which leads me to believe that that high release takes him a longer time to get rid of than maybe some other people. And that could be a little bit concerning on him. He tells, if you read about him, there's a great story that he ends up, that his dad ends up like rolling balls out to him everywhere, and he just has learned how to shoot from everywhere on the floor, and so therefore maybe he actually has good enough depth to his game. Sounds like a really neat kid. His dad's a senior chief with the U.S. Navy, just retired. He was born in London. His brother played for the Super Bowl winning Seahawks. He had another brother actually drowned at an early age. He sounds like a wonderful kid. He did have a suspension early in his career for some team rules. On that bounce, off the back to basketball, off the bounce thing, one note I had is I don't think he's got a pull-up jumper at all. The one or two he took was really strange. He lost 30 pounds early in his career. You know, I love the numbers on him. If I have a second-round pick, I'm definitely taking him. I actually think he'll play in the NBA. I just think he's got enough little shoots it just well enough, big enough, unless he really turns out to be so slow side to side that he's not able to. Grant Williams, his teammate, I'll get to in a second, and then Keldon Johnson, who's being projected around a lot of Jazz picks, I'll touch on in just a moment as well as we continue. The real estate market has been changed, and it's been changed by a Utah company called Homey. Bunch of BYU MBAs started their first company helping and revolutionizing the way apartment complexes take rent and do rent, and they changed that with a really neat company. And when they were done with that, what was their next? They were going to figure out the real estate market, and they have done that. It's Homey. Instead of your regular, I'm just going to go give my 6% away for no particular reason, and regardless of the price of my house, I'm going to lose 6%. Homey has changed that model. Now it's a flat fee of $1,500 to list your house with Homey. Their team of experts will work with you and get your house on the market on all the regular listings. And they have right now are selling houses at faster than the market rate and at a higher price than the market rate. Find out more about Homey by texting LOCK, LOCKE, to 88588. That's 88588. They are revolutionizing the real estate market by saving you a tremendous amount of equity. A simple flat fee of $1,500 to list your house with Homey, and you get to keep the other equity. No longer percentage based on the value of what you did to improve your house somehow means you lose more money. No, we're not playing that game anymore. So text Homey or text LOCK, LOCKE, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. Also, special thanks, Father's Day, grip6.com/lock. Make sure you check it out, grip6.com/lock, for the great Father's Day gifts for you. Grant Williams was the SEC Player of the Year. He's a Tennessee star. I got to be honest, I don't see it at all. Like, I've watched 2 games, that's all. I don't see it at all. He plays entirely back to the basket. His outside jump shot seems to be non-existent. He's 6'7", 236. Unless he's going to evolve the way, frankly, George Niang and some of these other guys have, where they completely change their game while they're in the pros and you know, he's a pretty talented kid out of, I think, Charlotte, North Carolina, Houston, Texas. And maybe he'll be able to do that. But I saw a bunch of times where, frankly, he was playing low and a guy was bigger and taller just went and grabbed a rebound over him because he's just not that big. So I don't see it on Grant Williams. You know, he's led Tennessee to a 3 seed and a 2 seed. And, he's Corliss Williams and Byron Houston, and that player doesn't exist in the NBA. Keldon Johnson's interesting. And I have a question or two for you on Keldon Johnson. So Keldon Johnson, to me, does look like the player that's playing at Kentucky who's not tapping his skills. He plays on the wing. He starts all most possessions in the corner. He's 19 years old. He was a pretty big time recruit. He was Kentucky was late in the recruiting process to him. He was originally going to go to NC State or Maryland. He becomes all SEC as a freshman. He plays 31 minutes a night as a freshman at Kentucky. Like, that's to me really eye opening. Number 12 recruit in the country, did go to Oak Hill Academy. Big feature story on him in The Athletic by Kyle Tucker, who hosts Locked On Wildcats for the Kentucky podcast on this network. And he, his dad sounds like a really, like, I fought Calipari and I told Calipari I didn't want him and I went head to head with Calipari. Kind of a weird, weird element of things. There's a weird Keldon Johnson story of him driving around a $250,000 McLaren car. I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't even know because I don't know those kind of cars right now, which doesn't rub me right. You haven't been drafted yet. Why are you in that car doing Hollywood things at 19 years old? But from a basketball standpoint, he has good movement getting open. He comes off screens in Calipari's system in a way that translates to the NBA. He has good ball movement without the ball to get himself an open look. He hit 38% of his threes in his three attempts a game. He did have an incredibly low steal and low block rate, which is pretty disconcerting because that's the best way to judge athleticism on the collegiate level. Like, he blocked 0.2 shots and stole 0.8. So I think that's a little concerning there. He's very outspoken in that same feature article about him. It was all how he talks trash and came in talking trash right away and doesn't set down for anyone. And I guess you can interpret that either way. It's disconcerting. All the stuff I read about that kind of stuff to me was a little disconcerting, and maybe just my interpretation of, you know, you're going to come into the NBA and you need to take a little bit of a back seat to the fact that you've got to find your place in the league. And this didn't necessarily sound like somebody who wanted to do that. But I, you know, that's just reading articles. I don't have any intel on that at all. Watching him play though, I mean, he can stroke it and I did like the way he moved without the ball. And when he dribbled, he looked comfortable. He doesn't do a lot off the dribble drive. When we did the numbers on him, they're just, if you might recall, there was really not a lot there. He was a knockdown studly shooter, and he was in the 73rd percentile of shooting off the bounce. He was in the 79th percentile of catch and shoot. He had no isolation percentage because he'd only done 8 isolation plays. He'd only played 15 plays with the ball on a pick and roll. His transition percentage was only 49 percentile. And I would say watching him, he didn't jump out to me like he's some elite, incredible athlete. There was a nice play where he drove into the lane, jump stop, kind of went up for a finger roll and missed it. You could see him duck his head as he was going up for the layup. I'm not sure, you know, that's going to have to figure out how to finish around traffic and things like that. But if I'm drafting 23rd and Keldon Johnson's on the board, that's a pretty intriguing piece to a puzzle. And I guess the question I would have to do if I was a coach reading all these feature articles on, and really just based a little bit off who his dad seems to be in the way, you know, he approached the John Cal. He was late to recruiting my son, so I didn't want to let him go there. And he finally Keldon talked me into it. Maybe it's a great story. It just struck me as kind of a strange, I got in fights and arguments with Calipari all the time. To me, it just seems strange. That's just my perspective on it. I'd really want to investigate and get an understanding in the interviews, and this is what the Jazz do, of, okay, if you come into this team, like, there's a great story about, I think it was J.R. Smith, It might have been Josh Smith, one of the two, who the Seattle Supersonics were interviewing him. And they asked him, it might not have been either of those two kids, actually. Might have actually almost been DeShawn Stevenson. Anyway, there was some kid, let's go with no name, who was going to have to sit behind Ray Allen. And in the interview, the kid literally looked at him like, well, why would I play off the bench behind Ray Allen? Oh, because he's the best shooting guard in the NBA. Like, I'm not going to do that. So, you know, get a read on that. But I think Keldon Johnson's pretty interesting. I really love the fact he played 31 minutes a night at Kentucky. That tells me there he played. Now, I love that about Trey Lyles, too, and it turned out to be wrong. And some of these, you know, these mid-range Kentucky guys either turned out to be Devin Booker, this incredibly untapped talent, or Trey Lyles, whose weaknesses didn't get exposed because they were playing around so much talent, and then I missed on Trey Lyles really, really badly. So, all right, that is Locked On Jazz today. Oh, I watched Cason Edwards. He's small. He's just really, really small. And there just aren't that many 6'1 point guards in the NBA. That's just jumped. I mean, he's just really small. It was eye-opening to me. All right, that is my take on those draft prospects. I'll try to watch some more coming up. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.